Good afternoon, and welcome to the September 6th, 2011, after the summer's over edition of CNI Conversations. This is Cliff Lynch, and today I'm joined by Joan Lippincott, our associate director here at CNI, and we have a few things to catch up on that have been going on over the summer. First off, let me just note that over the Labor Day weekend, we released a new and revised website for the coalition. The website address, www.cni.org, has not changed, but you'll see a site that I hope will be familiar, but at the same time considerably polished and a bit easier to navigate, and that's been really pretty thoroughly updated to make it easier to find the information that you need. So I invite you to go and visit that. There are a few things, as I said, that I wanted to touch on, and one of the places I wanted to start, actually, was with a pair of books and an exhibition I was fortunate enough to see. Very recently, I had an opportunity to look at a book called Visual Complexity, Mapping Patterns of Information by Manuel Lima. This is a wonderful, mostly graphical, as you would expect, book, which has a lot of material on how people are visualizing various scientific and scholarly activities as part of the response to what I might characterize as data-intensive science. What I found interesting about this book is that rather than focusing on algorithms for rendering huge data sets and these kinds of things, which often are the sort of computational response to the challenges of data-intensive science, the book instead focused on the sort of development of new visual conventions and metaphors for trying to understand various kinds of evolutionary processes, interrelationships, and things like that. And really, in that sense, reminds us that we really are going to need to develop a whole new visual vocabulary for dealing with data-intensive scholarship, and that we can see, you know, elements of this vocabulary already falling into place, whether it's visualizations of the so-called tree of life, or the sort of work that people like Bernie Fischer are doing in speculative reconstruction of buildings and cities from historical evidence, where they need to differentiate the parts of the reconstruction that are very strongly based in architectural or archaeological evidence from those that are based on descriptive sources, from those that are really extrapolation by more recent scholars. Paired up with this, a second book, which came out earlier this year, is called Cartographies of Time. This was written by Anthony Grafton, a very well-known humanist on the faculty at Princeton, and Daniel Rosenberg. And this really looks at the way historical events and their interrelationships have been depicted from the Renaissance and indeed from earlier times. And there is a marvelous small exhibition that's at the Princeton Art Museum that I was fortunate enough to be able to visit a few weeks ago. I think it's only got a couple more weeks to run, where they had some of the source materials, largely from Princeton's special collections, on display, and really it provides a tremendous new dimension on the book, because many of these source materials are actually very large and enormously intricate documents that it's hard to get a sense of from the reproductions in the book. And again, here you can see this as a, you know, sort of a history of the development of various visual, you know, vocabulary here for the envisioning of, in many cases, very, very long periods of time. So if you're interested in these sorts of things, I heartily recommend those two books for perusing and the exhibition at the Princeton Art Museum. While we're on the subject of interesting books and reports, I also want to draw attention to a monumental, and I think monumental is really the right word for it, both in the sense of how much it's going to hurt if you drop it on your foot and the quality of the work, report that came out from the Council on Library Resources dealing with cyber infrastructure for classical studies. This is the outcome of a number of workshops and other activities that CLEAR has been sponsoring over the last, I think, probably 18 to 24 months. I was fortunate enough to be able to sit in on at least one of the workshops that provided some of the background for the report, but it's really just a tremendous kind of in-depth look at the kinds of content resources and tools and collaboration resources that some of the best minds in classical studies and particularly the use of digital technologies to support classical studies have been able to develop. It's worth noting that among the humanities, classical studies was a very early adopter of digital technologies and is in many ways, I think, now one of the more mature disciplines in applying these. I really wish we had a bookshelf for other scholarly disciplines of similarly extensive analyses, but this is definitely worth spending some time with. I'd also just like to briefly mention a talk that I had the opportunity to give at the American Library Association meeting in July. This was for an OCLC sponsored pre-conference symposium that they called The Infinite Collection. And they asked me to do the opening keynote for this. It really gave me an opportunity to organize some thinking I've been doing about the nature of the scholarly and the cultural record, how that record is changing, and how libraries and other cultural memory organizations relate to and co-evolve with that record. They've put the video of the talk up, and you can find links to that either at OCLC or at our website at CNI. And if you're interested in these kinds of questions, which frankly I feel like aren't really discussed enough, particularly in the kind of broad sense that I tried to do at this session, you might find the video of this this interesting. This is something I really hope to be able to come back to and explore in more length in essay or book form at some point in future. But I'd certainly welcome any reactions to this. At this point, I've got a few more things I want to report on, but I'm going to turn the conversation over to Joan Lippincott for a while, and she's going to share some of the work she's been doing on digital scholarship centers.
Thanks, Cliff. So recently, I've been focusing some of my attention on digital scholarship centers. And this topic combines a number of emphases of CNI's program over the years, including digital humanities, reconfiguration of library spaces, collaboration, and new service modes. In this context, the term digital scholarship centers refers to programs generally with an associated place, a physical space, and usually in a library that focuses on providing high-end technologies, expertise, and services, primarily to faculty and graduate students who are working on digital projects in the humanities and social sciences. Some digital scholarship centers focus on the sciences or on a broad array of disciplines, but for the present, I'm concentrating on those that target the humanities in particular. For our CNI community, I've been encouraging presentations by some of the leading digital scholarship centers at our membership meetings. They've focused on vision, programs, collaborations, and services, as well as descriptions of the innovative physical spaces in which they are housed. You can find many of these presentations on our website. As academic libraries renovate their physical space, many are thinking about how they can better serve faculty and graduate students, and one path is to develop a digital scholarship center. I've been doing some preliminary interviews of faculty and librarians involved with digital scholarship centers as I prepare to give some presentations and perhaps write some things on this topic. As I've talked with faculty members and librarians, particularly about the needs of graduate students, some of the things we discuss that intrigue me include, what are the models for assisting graduate students who want to use sophisticated tools and technologies in their thesis or dissertation, but don't yet have the background or the support or expertise from their advisor to get the requisite skills? I'm learning that some centers offer a small number of fellowships where students will get a stipend to pursue their work under the wing of skilled information professionals. Most of them offer workshops, some even full courses, and most offer one-on-one consultation. Another question, what are some of the most important things that graduate students need to know as they undertake a major digital project? While I initially thought about this as a question about skills, some of my interviewees pointed out to me that other things are critically important, such as learning how to manage a project or learning how to think creatively about scholarship and make the links to the technologies that will enable new questions and new insights. So in other words, rather than focusing on skills, thinking about the work and the research and then being creative about new technologies that will help answer new kinds of questions. Another question, how are genuine partnerships forged between faculty and librarians and technologists? Particularly in the humanities, faculty have worked largely on their own and are not used to collaborations. They may also be more comfortable developing a team with graduate students rather than partnering with librarians or technologists. My impression is that this is very much a work in progress on most campuses. And then finally, at least for our conversation today, how well are new forms of scholarship being accepted by institutions, here in the case of electronic theses and dissertations in particular, by departments? This also varies by campus, but acceptance has been slow in many departments, and looking ahead to future scholarship, it's been slow in acceptance by many scholarly societies, disappointingly slow for those of like us who believe that digital scholarship has the capability to revolutionize fields, as I discussed in the previous CNI conversations after attending the Digging into Data conference. In addition, many graduate students in humanities go into careers that are not traditional tenure-track academic positions, and the skills they gain through work on significant digital projects may assist them in succeeding in the broader job market. Whether this is of interest to their graduate departments or not is not clear. Well, I welcome your input into this work on digital scholarship centers. We would like more session proposals from centers doing innovative work, and I'd be happy to hear from you about what particular things you want to know about these centers and the communities they're meant to serve. Back to you, Cliff.
Thanks, Joan. And you can be sure you're going to be hearing more about these digital scholarship centers in coming conversations and in our upcoming member meetings. This is an area both Joan and I have been talking about quite a bit, and we think it's at a very, very interesting stage of its development right now, and certainly worthy of some systematic investigation. I want to conclude this call with this conversation with a bit of a discussion about a few developments in research data management. The first thing I want to mention is a workshop which was held in mid-July at Princeton with NSF funding and under the auspices of CASC and of EDUCAUSE's new ACTI group, the successor to NetEDU. This was a meeting that was intended to bring together scholars working in data-intensive areas, information technologists, and particularly people running campus IT operations, and librarians and other folks who were involved in the actual ongoing curation of data. I think it was a pretty productive session, and we asked, I was part of the steering committee for this, we asked participants to submit position papers, and we've put all of those up on the web at the session website. You can find a pointer to that if you look in the CNI Announce archives, as I've posted several things about this meeting over the last few months. There are some that are very brief and that really don't go much farther than expressing an interest or an acknowledgement that this is a new direction that a given campus is undertaking. But there are a number of really fascinating position papers, and this collection is well worth at least some browsing, I think. We took video of the sessions and at present are in the throes of trying to prepare a workshop report. The video is, I believe, now online, and I'll make an announcement when the workshop report is available for comment. I think that this was another really good opportunity to forge connections between the various interested parties who need to work together to meet the needs that are emerging in terms of data sharing and data reuse. In late August, I was fortunate enough to be able to attend a two-day workshop sponsored by the National Academy's Board on Research Data and Information that was hosted out in Berkeley, California. This workshop looked specifically at the very complicated complex of issues around attribution and citation, questions about how people drawing on other people's data should cite that data, both in a sort of a mechanistic sense of what should citations look like, and in particular, how might these be structured so that they can be fed into and analyzed using the various developments in bibliometrics and web metrics metrics that have evolved and are being increasingly used. I mean, one subtext of this, which we looked at last December in a workshop after the CNI meeting, and that I really consistently feel uneasy about is the growing kind of mindless use of impact factors and citation counts as part of tenure and promotion. It's important to understand many of these metrics were never intended for that and are really quite poorly suited for those purposes. Nonetheless, as these take over more and more mind share, you see people wanting to be able to count citations or reuses of data in a similar sort of a way. This again ties into incentives about why people should curate data, why they should make it available for reuse, why they should share it. There are many other complicated questions here about what data, about how provenance of data is represented when people are dealing with extracts. There are other pieces of this too. For example, it's not uncommon now to find databases that really represent the contributions of literally thousands or tens of thousands of scientists across decades, GenBank being a good example. If you're trying to do computations to try and understand how the sequencing of various species sheds light on understanding molecular biological evidence for the sort of tree of life, is it really realistic to cite just GenBank or to cite the thousands of individual contributors to GenBank who may have provided sequences that were essential to your research? Similarly, but at a less extreme level, you can ask the same questions about meta-analysis across large numbers of clinical trials. So there are a whole range of questions, not just about mechanics, but about scholarly norms here as well. This was a very provocative set of sessions. My understanding is that the presentations will be made available through the Bertie site at the National Academies. There will be a report of the meeting, although that will take some time in preparation. But I think this was a very valuable close look at some of the specific issues that are emerging out of this overall move towards data reuse and data sharing. The National Academies meeting was followed by a separate meeting of the organization called DataCite. This is an international organization that grows in large part out of some work that the DFG in Germany funded a few years ago, and actually that we had a presentation on at the CNI meeting a couple years back. There's now an international organization in Europe. Many of the players are national libraries or national laboratory organizations, people like the Max Planck Institute or the Leibniz Institute in Germany would be the sort of organization you might find as a player here. In the States, the two sort of founding representatives for DataCite were Purdue University, which has been enormously active in data curation related activities, and the California Digital Library. And DataCite decided to do a day-and-a-half meeting to look at some of the issues around data curation in a little bit broader sense. The National Academies meeting was a very small invitational meeting. The DataCite meeting was open to the public and was considerably larger. So they covered some of the same territory that the National Academies meeting covered, except from a slightly different perspective. And then they got into some detail on the work of the DataCite organization itself, which is supplying digital object identifiers for data sets and working in coordination with other organizations like ORCID to think through how to attach authorship to those and other metadata along with those object identifiers. A very interesting meeting. They've made a lot of progress and certainly seem to be emerging as one of the most promising actual approaches for providing registry for data sets across disciplines. Clearly, there are some discipline-specific registries that are already well-established and well-advanced in specific niches like GenBank, but they're trying to work across the full range of scholarly areas. So I believe that they have got material from the presentations at their meeting, again, going up at their website. So that's our report of a few of the things that have been occupying us over the last couple of months. As we roll into the fall season, we'll be going back to trying to get out one of these conversations every 2 to 3 weeks, and we look forward to sharing lots of new material with you. We welcome, as always, questions or that you'd like us to address or suggestions for topics that we might cover in future calls. Please send them along to either one of us. Thanks for joining us today.